Welcome to Stories of Stories. I'm your host, Mike Chin. In each edition of this podcast, I explore the stories behind a specific creative project, process, or experience. I'll be talking about projects on this show with the expectation that either you're already familiar with the project I'm talking about, so for example, if it's a story, you've already read it, or you don't plan to read it. Regardless, what I'm trying to get at is this podcast will include all kinds of spoilers, so please listen no further if you don't want anything spoiled. This episode, I'll be discussing Answer Woman. Answer Woman is a short story I published with The Normal School in the fall of 2016. I think this can be a particularly interesting story to discuss in terms of thinking about the lifespan or the time it takes to finalize the story or particularly see it through from, you know, conception and beginning to write it to actually seeing it published. So for some of the, particularly some of the shorter pieces I've worked on, some of the flash pieces, some of the poems, I've written them in, just one or two sittings, revised, pretty quickly over the span of, a week or two, and then found a home for them with a journal that publishes very regularly, or I happen to catch them at a time when, they're just looking to fill a last spot or two before going to press, and, it gets in, and then that whole, timetable of starting the piece and then seeing it published, runs just, within a couple months. But oftentimes it's a lot longer than that. And for this one in particular, it was about a 5.5 year span between getting the idea and writing the first draft for this story. All of that part of it kind of happened within about a month period. But then actually seeing it in print, it took another, well over 5 years for that to happen. The idea for this story came to me at a museum. It was at the National Galleries in London, and I was outside the museum and watching these performers and street vendors, and the idea of Answer Woman came to me, and I'm not sure what other sort of outside influences may have been in effect or, what really sparked the idea, but I just remember, being outside, looking at these people, and the idea just sort of coming to me of this woman sitting there with a sign of her own, and her talent being that she could answer any question that someone might ask of her. So I ended up going from room to room in the first stages of visiting that museum. It was kind of a wasted trip in terms of seeing the art there, because I was sitting down and just writing down ideas for this story more than I was looking at any of the paintings. And the overwhelming majority of the plot for the story did come to me that very afternoon. I had a finger on that from, both from a character and a plot perspective. I kind of had the sense that this is one of the strongest stories I conceived of, and I was really, really excited about actually getting down to get to writing it. And I think one of the principles I really appreciated about it was that this was really, magical realism in its purest sense. Shifting one detail, the title character, Answer Woman, being able to answer any question that she is asked and answer it correctly, was kind of the conceit of the story, and, rolling out from that she had these brothers who she'd, never known existed, but they come into her life, and they have their own version of this ability as well. Just allowing for that detail, which obviously, at least to my knowledge, is not something that, exists in the real world, but plugging that into realistic characters in a realistic situation in the real world, and just kind of letting it ride out from there. And I was really happy with the conceit for that story, and where it went. In general, I very consciously dodged writing about New York City. That's a piece of advice that I got relatively early in my writing career, was to do that, in part because it's cliche, because, in terms of stories centered and set in particular cities, New York has such a disproportionate number of stories, dedicated to it, and also in part the very practical advice that the publishing industry is in large part based there, and so, so many people who might be reading my work are people who are very familiar with New York, and myself not being a native New Yorker, never having lived there for a period of time, just having visited there a number of times, I couldn't really capture it with the level of authenticity that would be expected from people who do live there and do make a lot of decisions in publishing. So I'm probably overlooking some exception to this, but I think this may be the only story I've written, at least as an adult, that was set in New York. It's ironic that I thought of it in London, but most of my experience in museums, particularly from growing up, was visiting those museums in New York, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Natural History Museum. My family went to a lot when I was growing up. We used to visit my grandparents in the city. So you know, I wrote this story and let it sit, let it cool for a few months, and then it came time for the thesis process at the first master's program I attended at Johns Hopkins. And you know, worked with Ellie Williams, a very talented, you know, writer and teacher there. And it was a really fruitful process, helping to refine the prose and help fleshing out some of the character beats in this story. Again, the overall trajectory of the story actually didn't change very much over the course of this project, but there were some added scenes, and there were a lot of moments that were altered or enhanced throughout that process, and I think the story did get significantly stronger over that period. But then, not very long after that, you know, within a year of that whole process, I began the process of applying to MFA programs. And you know, I worked intensively with my mentor, Harvey Grossinger, on that. I discussed that in an earlier podcast, but I worked with him, and we had two stories we focused on. I actually gave him a group of three stories early on, and you know, we kind of mutually agreed I was going to send two stories for most of my applications. For some with lower page counts, just the one story. So it ended up being Practical Men, which is the story I discussed in my very first edition of this podcast, and Answer Woman was the other one of those stories that we worked on pretty intensively. And the one that he actually cited from the very beginning is saying that he thought this was actually the strongest story that I had, and the one that should definitely go in my application. I was more neutral between those two stories and thinking that they were, I think my two best pieces of work at that point. So in any event, you did go through significant revision working with Harvey. The story had already gone through, you know, probably five or six rounds of significant revision up to that point. And then in working with Harvey, probably had another solid seven or eight rounds of revision, working with him and making, you know, a handful of bigger changes, weaving in against some elements of character. You know, there's a musical element that does show up in the final draft that wasn't there until I was working with Harvey and was looking for a way to sub out some of the more generic gestures the character Saul kind of demonstrates in the story, and that bit of the song that appears in there really, really helped to work all of that out. So, you know, I made it into the MFA program at Oregon. I believe, and when I was looking back at it, that's actually one of the programs where I'd only sent Practical Men. I hadn't shown them the Answer Woman, so that was kind of a non-factor there. But when I got to Oregon, you know, I started sending both of those stories out to a lot of my favorite journals. And by early 2015, I was getting a lot of nice personalized rejections from some of those journals. And I don't mean that sarcastically. This is one of those things where not all rejections are created equally. There are definitely a lot of form rejections that go out. I've received, you know, more than my share of them. But there are those kind of keen moments when an editor does take the time to send a more personalized or higher tier kind of response, you know, talking specifically about the story and, you know, maybe giving a reason why they didn't take it, or maybe just explaining, you know, it was a real close call this time. Please send us some more. And that was really encouraging, and it kind of gave me that inkling that, you know, it was definitely worth sticking through with this story. You know, I've published, you know, fairly aggressively, fairly prolifically over the last couple of years. And, you know, in that process, there are a number of pieces where, particularly more for my poetry side, you know, early on, I wasn't as confident in my work there. Sent it out, you know, again, to just a lot of places, some of which were not, you know, kind of considered the higher tier, higher profile kind of journals, but was just happy to have the work out there somewhere. You know, and that's true of, you know, a significant amount of my fiction as well, but this is one of those stories that I kind of decided from relatively early on that, you know, this felt like kind of one of my opportunities to break into a you know, more impressive or, you know, higher profile kind of market, and I wanted to, you know, not squander that, so I was only sending it out to journals or contests that I really respected. And speaking of contests, so it was a finalist for two separate contests in the summer of 2015. In one of those cases ended up in the hands of Joyce Carol Oates as the final judge, so that was kind of a cool feather in my cap at that point to know that she had read one of my stories, or at least the first page or two of my story. I'm not sure if she actually got through the whole thing, because in any event, it did not win in that situation. But after that point, you know, yeah, I was still feeling confident about the story, but it also had accumulated a fair number of rejections, and you know, I didn't want to send the same story out to the same places. Usually, that's just you know not what you do unless an editor specifically asks for that. So I made some minor tweaks to the story, and in the fall of 2015, when I was working with this piece, my main drive was to edit it down. Because as much as I really believed in the story, believed in the writing, it was pushing 7,000 words, and over 25 pages. And in my experience, it's more that 5,000 words, 16 to 20 pages, that's kind of the ideal target range that I've found for sending out a substantial short story. And if it's going to be longer, you know, it definitely can work at a longer page count, bigger size. But the story almost has to be that much better to justify itself. It's almost a handicap going into that submission process. So the final version of the story ended up being a little bit shorter. It was just under 23 manuscript pages, around 6,300 words. So still over that area that I target, but you know, definitely cut down a fair bit there. So after I'd done that extra round of revision and editing, I did send it out aggressively in late 2015, and in early 2016, finally got that acceptance from the normal school. And it was definitely one of the biggest, acceptances of my career up to that point. You know, just a really, you know, well looked at, well celebrated journal, and one that I'm really happy to have work in, because it's not just any journal, it's definitely kind of a weird journal that kind of celebrates unusual work. So to find a home for my work there, and particularly this strange story with these speculative elements, really felt like a great fit, and I felt really good about that whole situation. But it was interesting because it was still not done in terms of editing. I got approved from Normal School, which is very professional, which is, again, a token of kind of the kind of organization they are, definitely a polished professional publication. So I got approved from them that the whole, you know, layout of the story as it would appear in the magazine, and there were no wholesale revisions at that point, but they had noted an, you know, good half dozen or so spots where they suggested rewording things, or small scale changes, all of which I thought were fair. My philosophy in publication has generally been not to be really picky about those edits unless it actually changes the meaning of the story or I actively think it's a bad change. These edits range from ones I agreed with to ones I was legitimately neutral on, in which case I'm happy to defer to an editor because ultimately it is their magazine and I'm honored to have a place in it. So ultimately, you know, the story did come out in that fall 2016 issue of the Normal School, and I was really excited to see it there. It's one of the best moments of my time as kind of a short story writer, to place that story with them, and I think it's one of my strongest pieces, to date, even now. Okay, so that's a wrap on Answer Woman. So now we'll go ahead and move on to Mike's monthly endorsement. And again, as an artist, I do think it's important to be consuming other things, to see what interests and inspires you and to see what's already out there and see what's come before you. So at the end of these episodes, I'm recommending a book, story, movie, TV show, a band, a wrestling match, etc., that may have escaped huge mainstream audience. That might be a little bit dated now, or that's on the cusp of being forgotten, or just not acknowledged, but that I recommend. So, for this edition, I'm recommending Lucha Underground. Lucha Underground is a small but nationally televised wrestling promotion based out of Los Angeles, which, as the name suggests, has an emphasis on Mexican wrestlers. One of the best descriptions I heard before I started following it, because I didn't actually start watching Lucha Underground until a couple years into them running their product, was that the WWE and a lot of similar wrestling promotions are wrestling companies that put on TV shows. On the flip side of it, this is a TV show about wrestling. I think that's a really important distinction. So this show is very professionally and frankly artfully shot. It's a wrestling product and interviews that are good, but also creative. They're always kind of focusing on their storytelling elements. There's an element of magical realism within this product, which is part of why I thought to pair it with this story, Answer Woman. It does feature an undead character, characters who abduct another character, creating kind of a startling, horrific, kind of traumatic situation, and a great story of this character's kind of recovery and redemption. All this kind of ambitious storytelling, all of which is filmed in advance. That's another kind of difference between them and most wrestling promotions. They kind of go on a much shorter timetable and respond to audiences. I kind of respect the craft and kind of the confidence of the producers of Lucha Underground for kind of writing whole television seasons and filming them all. And there's often months, if not a year, gap before they actually air to a national audience. They also include intergender wrestling, which I think is really interesting. It's something that happens a lot more on the independent scene than on the major national promotions. Involves a certain suspension of disbelief, because obviously, just based on, you know, differences in physical size, it can be hard to, you know, buy some of the female performers contending with some of the larger male performers. But you know, kind of when we're watching professional wrestling, we're obviously kind of having some level of disbelief anyway. And I think this plays with that kind of suspension of disbelief, you know, in an organic way, and opens up all sorts of storytelling opportunities. I think it's generally been really successful for Lucha Underground. And I've watched a number of wrestling promotions that do things like this, and I actually think Lucha Underground is one of the best in that way, in terms of producing really interesting stories and great matches out of all of that. All right, so that's all for this episode. I'm wishing you all good health, happiness, and creativity, and I'll catch you next time.